Hello, listeners. If you're hearing this, I'm going to assume you're at least interested in money and understanding the economy and finances. And some of us want our kids to have that knowledge, too. Check out Million Bazillion, Marketplace's award-winning kids podcast that breaks down money to help dollars make more sense. A whole new season is out now. Million Bazillion is presented in partnership with Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Greenlight helps kids and teens learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. You can learn more at greenlight.com/million. And tune in to Million Bazillion wherever you find your favorite podcast.
All right. Should we do it?
Totally ought to do it.
Let's do this.
All right. Here you go. You start.
Oh, okay. Hey, everybody. We're back for the second time this week. We're going to enact Kai's good idea.
See, there you go.
A very special bonus Make Me Smart episode to hash out what is going on with Congress and Facebook and data and privacy and all of those things. The stream of consciousness episode, some tweeters are calling it.
That's a good one. All right, so let's climb right in, actually. Let's climb right in, because time is short. We got things to do. Give me, first of all, your gut. You sat there and you watched all and or most of the five-ish hours of testimony that Mr. Zuckerberg gave. What'd you think?
I did, minus the occasional potty break.
I had so much
to say about that. Okay. Well, first of all, I do want to warn people, not warn them, but I do want to let you know that it is not going to only be us in our stream of consciousness. We actually got a Make Me Smart listener on the phone to talk about this, who has a very pertinent take. And by pertinent, I mean she's on the Federal Trade Commission.
By pertinent, I mean regulatory.
She's like a listener. Yeah. And turns out a total expert. She's been a leader at one of these federal agencies. Terrell McSweeney, we've talked to her before. And she gave us sort of a front row seat on data and privacy issues. So we called her up and we will talk about her after this.
Yes.
I think I really liked what Kevin Roos in the New York Times had to say today, which was sort of what I was thinking yesterday, which is like Congress is getting close. They just are trying to hone in on exactly what the problem is. And
really?
If you watched in particularly, yes. And I know that I know what you thought about Congress's performance. I will say the House was better than the Senate.
Yep.
By about 30 years. I mean, why are they all so old, though?
I don't know, but that's a whole different problem.
Yeah, that's a whole different conversation about our government. You heard so many issues come up, and all of them are relevant. And all of them are relevant given the unbelievable sort of scale and scope and size and power of Facebook.
Yeah.
And everything from, you know, illegal pharmacy ads to censoring conservative speech to data and privacy to Russian interference in the election. Like, all of that was in there.
Right.
And what appeared to be some tech support, too.
Yeah, well, totally, right? I mean, there was everything in there except can you set up my Facebook page for me? And look, we should be clear. A lot of that stuff was in there, the opioids and the are you a liberal or whatever. Because that's a legit concern with a company that has 2 billion customers spread across the planet. And I totally get that. But wait a second. And let me back you up for a minute and ask you, referring to my previously aforestated remark. What do you think the problem that Congress is trying to solve or should be trying to solve is?
Oh, well, okay. So there's what Congress thinks, which is all kinds of things. And then there's what I think. And I think that the only problem they should work on in terms of just like minimizing unintended consequences is how companies are allowed to collect our data, use our data. And how long they're allowed to keep it.
Is that the, what's the tech term for this? Is that the zero-day virus, whatever the hell you guys call it? Right? No?
Nope.
No? Is that, all right. Well, see, that's why I have a technology person here, because it's, all right. So is that the foundational problem? Is that the fundamental issue? From there, can everything else be solved? I guess is the question.
I don't know that then after that, you have, you know, size, scope, monopoly, and competition questions that have to be answered around Facebook specifically.
Yeah,
but I think that you know, the problem that was identified in part as a result of the Cambridge Analytica story and the, you know, the election issues are related to size, scope, power, and messaging
mm-hmm.
in terms of what happens with respect to propaganda. How effective is it? I will tell you, we just had an interview that I found very reassuring that's going to be on Marketplace Tech with Sunshine Hillegas of Duke. She studies political science and society. That says that, look, there's no evidence that the things that Cambridge Analytica promised in terms of being able to change a vote, keep someone home, persuade them to vote a certain way. There's no evidence that that works. We don't know how impactful this hyper-targeted messaging actually is.
Mm-hmm.
What we do know is that it all relies on this wholesale harvesting of our information just in case it ever gets that good.
Right.
And that Facebook is engaged in that to an unbelievable degree, but so are many other companies. And so to me, that would solve a lot.
Got it. What do you make of Mark Zuckerberg's, not performance, but the words he said? Not for the first time I ask you this question. Do you think the company gets it now?
Still no.
God,
I'm
really?
I'm still going with no.
Oh, my God. See, that's amazing. I agree with you, but that's amazing. Because I think he went back to his hotel room, got rid of the suit, got on the Facebook plane, and went back to Menlo Park and said, phew, now let's move on. Right?
Feeling great.
Yeah.
Well, he might have said, hey, we should triple our lobbying budget. But, you know, this is we did have somebody tweet us and say, hey, can you go ahead and run down of the congressional panels that were grilling Facebook? And let's be clear, there were maybe 4 or 5 representatives who I thought did a particularly good job of actually making Mark Zuckerberg look uncomfortable. Nobody else did. The Senate committee was sort of a, I don't know, it wasn't like a hug, but it wasn't very tough on him. And a lot of those people have gotten a lot of money from Facebook.
Right. They totally have.
As direct campaign donations. And Lindsey Graham, you heard Senator Lindsey Graham basically ask Mark Zuckerberg, will you please help us write some legislation, should it come to that, that could regulate your industry? That's not going to help.
Yeah. And we should say here, actually, that there were some people and who on that committee who asked pointed questions, right? Anna Eshoo from Silicon Valley. She represents them in Silicon Valley in Congress. Also, Maria Cantwell, who used to be a tech executive herself, right? She asked the Palantir question, which everybody just went, ooh, my God, she just said Palantir.
Ooh.
You know, there were some really, really good questions. But I think in the aggregate, as you will hear in our conversation with Terrell McSweeney, I was underwhelmed by the Congress of the United States.
Yeah. I think if your average American sat down and watched that, and actually somebody called me yesterday in the middle of the House testimony, was sort of just like, I don't get it.
Yeah.
Can you? And I was like, I'm going to call you back in 3 hours. But I think there was so much in there. There were so many concerns raised in the course of what was really like a long PTA meeting that I don't know that anybody necessarily came out of it and thought, okay, I know what the problem is. But sometimes the problem is just like, boy, these guys are like too big.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they have too much power in too many arenas. And so how can that be solved? And I think it's fair to say it only gets solved in a number of ways. And unfortunately, one big way is consumers giving a hoot.
Right, right. And that,
so we will have to wait and see about whether they do.
And that's always the biggest hurdle, right, is consumers really engaging on these things. Do you think Facebook's too big to regulate at this point?
I think it's too, yes, in the sense that it's too big to regulate without putting Facebook competitors out of business. And, you know, that was Senator John Thune raised that at the very start. Like practically the first thing he said during the Senate hearings was, we have to make sure that any action we take wouldn't hurt a smaller competitor more than it would hurt Facebook, because a Google and a Facebook and even a Twitter, like, they have the ability to absorb any kind of regulation and work around it and even craft it.
Right.
Up with a different revenue stream.
Right. But that whole idea of competition and whether Facebook is a monopoly, I mean, we've all heard that Lindsey Graham-Zuckerberg exchange on, do you not think you're a monopoly, and Zuckerberg saying, I don't feel like we are, a gazillion times. They are functionally a monopoly in this space for a lot of reasons, the power of networking and all that jazz. So, and they have no real competition. I mean, Zuckerberg can say, well, you know, the average consumer uses 8 messaging devices and or apps and whatever. But
10,
but
yeah.
Baloney, right? So
well,
what's the
Facebook
what's,
owns 3 of those.
Right. So what's the regulatory threat if you're going after this ginormous company to smaller competitors? There are no real competitors.
Right. Well, but there could be. I don't think it's fair to say that there couldn't be.
And if Frog had wings, it wouldn't bump its butt on the ground.
There is absolutely a point where, you know, Google could get its act together and become an actual competitor. Apple could get its act together and become and create some sort and say, like, look, iMessage is the new Facebook. And if Apple said iMessage with all its built-in privacy that only works on our damn devices, or if they rolled it out to Android and other devices and said, we're going to make this more of a full-fledged communication and social platform, that would be very scary to Facebook. And everybody said exactly what you're saying right now about AOL and MySpace.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, like there really have been lots of examples throughout history of companies that were so big they could never, ever become, you know, never be but, outcompeted. And I don't think that's 100% true.
But this company has 2 billion people on the planet.
Yeah.
They're not AOL, man. This is like a galactic company.
Yep. Somebody asked me recently, one of our editors said, okay, well, look, if we could just boil this down to what are the existential threats to Facebook
right.
at this point? Restricting the flow of data, Mark Zuckerberg himself said, wouldn't necessarily reduce their revenue as much as you might think.
Mm-hmm.
I have a lot of follow-up questions about that. But he said, you know, one of the senators asked him what I think at the time I tweeted it, like, look, it sounds like a softball. I think this was a representative. It sounds like a softball, but it's actually pretty foundational, which is what would happen if the flow of personal data was significantly reduced to Facebook. And he said, well, it would like impact our revenue a little. But the main thing is the ads wouldn't be as good and you would hate it. Really?
Hmm.
Like, I'll take that bargain if that's actually true. And so that isn't the existential threat. The existential threat is that people will say, I don't want to use this anymore. And then advertisers will stop wanting to place their ads there because it just won't be worth their money. And they'll put them somewhere else. And that could always happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Should we go to Tara McSweeney and play her a little bit?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So Tara McSweeney is a listener to this podcast. She is a sitting member of the Federal Trade Commission. And we had her on last year, like early-ish, like episode 20 or something. And we decided since, you know, Facebook and the Federal Trade Commission have this consent decree and there's all kinds of talk about who's going to regulate and how that's going to happen, we decided to get her back on the phone. So we did. And I don't even know how this tape starts. So we'll just roll it and we'll see what happens.
Here's how it goes.
So let me start by saying what I should probably not do as a sitting Federal Trade Commissioner is comment on whether there's a consent decree violation here. But that disclaimer given, I'll say, look, I think this is an important conversation, one that the three of us have talked about before and one that a lot of Americans care about. And I'm kind of glad, frankly, that there's a lot of conversation happening in the country about things like FTC consent decrees and whether the FTC and our consumer protection framework is strong enough to protect consumer data rights in the digital age. You know, I think we've talked about this before. I'm not convinced that it is, although I think the FTC does an important job and is a terrific agency. I'm biased, of course. But I think the conversation we're having is, look, what the FTC can essentially do here is say, don't deceive consumers. Tell them how you're going to use their data and do that honestly. We don't have a tremendous amount of authority to go beyond that, to give consumers rights to their data and control over them. That's really up to the companies themselves. And that's the framework that we have here. And I think the conversation we're having is whether that's the right framework.
Congress is not covering itself in glory in these hearings. They are asking questions that are marginally informed at best. They are getting detoured and not chasing Mr. Zuckerberg's answers. I wonder if you are confident that federal regulatory agencies like the FTC have the oomph to do what you need to do.
Well, look, I think that we need to have technologists be part of the conversation about how we're designing technology products so that they are using our data responsibly. But I don't think it's fair to expect that every single member of Congress is a technical expert. In fact, like most Americans, they probably aren't. That doesn't mean that they don't have an important role to undertake in asking questions. And I think they're doing that to the best of their ability. Just like, you know, I don't know, my mom called me up and asked me questions after she read some of the latest stories. So, one of the challenges here is mm-hmm. government keeping pace with dynamic technology. I think that the FTC has brought into its operation technical expertise. And we're very fact specific. So we're generally pretty good at looking at some of the technical issues. But that said, I don't think the FTC itself is strong enough as it's currently configured. What I mean by that, though, is we are a tiny agency. We need more resources. We need more authorities like civil penalty authority and actual regulatory authority. And I think Congress needs to really think deeply about whether consumers in America deserve more rights to and control over their data. These are issues that the FTC has been raising for a number of years. In fairness to my agency, we haven't been sitting back saying, we've got this, you know, nothing to worry about here. In fact, we've been identifying problems, we've been talking about them, and we've been asking for additional authority and tools.
Yeah, I think just in talking about what the FTC can do, right, and your charter to sort of prevent deceptive behavior by companies, this does seem to be a moment where people are realizing, I think, how much more information about them is collected than they knew by Google, by Facebook, by data brokers, you know, by all kinds of companies, like you point out, and that data can be used in ways that they were not aware of. Maybe without a specific company in mind, but at what point does that kind of cross over into deceptive behavior? Like how does the FTC make the determination that, you know, Google was not honest about how information was going to be used, or Facebook was not honest with consumers, versus our just inability to understand the incredibly complex landscape of ad technology?
Well, so essentially our deception framework relies on being honest with consumers about how their information is going to be collected and used. That can take a variety of forms over time. What the FTC has tried to urge industry to do is move away from those really long terms of service agreements that no one understands and no one reads, and try to provide more real-time information to people so that they have an opt-in choice, especially when sensitive information, which is like children's information, health information, financial information, is going to be used. Geolocation, for example, is going to be used, collected and used in some way. So we do think people need that kind of real-time choice, and that should be an opt-in choice. And I think that is the best practice that a lot of companies are moving to, and it's certainly the same concepts are included in the General Data Protection Regulation in Europe. But I think one of the challenges here, and you're, I think, flagging it, Molly, which is if companies are giving clear and truthful information, frankly, there's very little the FTC can do after that point, unless there is something very unreasonable occurring. And then sometimes we can bring cases, and that involves using our other authority, which is our unfairness authority. We use that very sparingly in this space. So if you are selling confidential records without consent, if you're trying to trick people, cases of revenge porn, we have used that authority. But I think one of the core questions here is whether we ought to have some additional conversation about protections that people ought to be owed, and controls, frankly, they ought to have, especially when their data is being processed in unexpected ways by unexpected third parties.
So what do you think? Should they have those controls? I mean, answer your own question.
Yes, I do think they should have those controls. Frankly, I'm also a competition regulator. I think it'd be incredibly pro-competitive, and I think we'll get a lot of innovation if we allow users to have more control over their data. This is also, again, one of the features of the GDPR. But if you think about it, it's not so much that every single person is going to exercise those rights. It's that we start to rebalance the incentives in the marketplace. We start to have a mechanism to hold companies a little bit more accountable to the design choices that they're making around how they're using and collecting our data, because we have a little bit more of a threat that we could take it and move it and use it in some other way. Not to to get all like economic on you guys, but basically the I think there's a fair amount of
jam. It's fine. Go ahead. Feel free.
Well, there's a fair amount of information here that basically says, look, like the value of personal data is such that most companies are essentially adopting this like collect first, collect as much as possible, and think about what you're going to do with it later. And it's changing that paradigm that I think is important.
So what do you think, Ms. Wood?
Tara McSweeney, she's with me on this one. Well, okay. One thing we didn't mention going into Tara McSweeney though was that that Facebook is under this consent decree. She would not confirm whether they are investigating whether the Cambridge Analytica collection in particular, and maybe some of the app collection that was happening before Facebook changed its platform around 2014, violated that consent decree. And if they find in this hypothetical investigation that it was a violation, Facebook could be subject to fines that are $40,000 per violation or per user account that was compromised. So we have talked about what would make people care, maybe, or make Facebook care. Maybe it would be that.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
I was just going to say emphasis on the maybe. All right, a little bit
eternal.
Yeah, right. A little bit of quick fun before we get out of here, Molly. just because it's sort of like State of the Union bingo, right? We need a new drink for this Facebook testimony.
I'm just looking at this now.
You got one? What was it? Somebody tweeted at you.
I did get a drink. The background is that all the producers know that I'm obsessed with the GDPR.
Which is
the general data protection regulation that's going to go into effect in the EU in May that could fine companies up to 4% of their total revenue if they do not properly take care of and inform consumers in the EU about the use of their data. That affects any company anywhere in the world that handles the data of citizens in the European Union. So it is a big deal, and I talk about it all the time, so much so that we decided there should be a drinking game, which led to the drink. The user, Twitter user John Zustroen, says that the recipe for the GDPR drink should be 5 ounces of bourbon, ice, optional, served in an opaque glass or in a soda can to protect the drinker's privacy.
Nothing going on here, officer. There's nothing to say.
John really gets me.
Move right along.
That is awesome. And he also added a bonus cocktail, the double opt-in, which is 2 ounces of cask strength bourbon. I love John. He really gets me. Wow. 2 dashes of bitters, 2 teaspoons of absinthe, 2 ice cubes, a lemon peel, a lime peel, and you must order twice to get one drink.
You had way more fun doing this than I did, man. I just got...
Bravo!
All right, one more. There's one more. Congressional hearing walk-up music? What is this?
Yes. So I don't know if you noticed, but during the House hearings, my God, did I really watch a lot of this.
Really?
Woo. Greg Walden, I think, the chair of the House committee, every time he introduced a new representative, it was like a baseball announcer. He would be like, here is, I'd like to, representative from the great state of California. Like, he really played it up. And so I was like, this sounds like a baseball game, baseball announcer. And somebody said, all that's missing is the walk-up music. So I asked people what their congressional walk-up music, if they had got to have walk-up music for a congressional hearing, what would it be? And I said, I have dibs on Enter Sandman by Metallica.
All right, I'm going to let you riff on the rest of these. Go ahead.
Don't you have one? All right, well,
I don't have congressional hearing walk-up music, but go ahead.
I Fought the Law, preferably by The Clash, was probably the runner-up, but that was a common one. Go all the way back to Sonny Curtis.
Wow.
Maybe the Bobby Fuller Four. People were hardcore. She Blinded Me with Science. Science. Mama Says Knock You Out by LL Cool J. Competition's paying the price. I'm gonna knock you out. Mama said knock you out. I Confess by English Bee. That was funny. The people who went with the hearing one, that was super funny. Here Come the Hot Stepper. Here come the hot stepper. I'm the lyrical. And then some universal picks, like obviously Eye of the Tiger, shout out to Sarah Harbin, The Anarchist, and Highway to Hell.
Wow.
And then Adam, this is my favorite, El Ferberino. You can have fun on Twitter. You know what? I will say, during my 2 days of live tweeting, it was an important reminder for me because I've gotten so down on Twitter because I feel like every time I try to have any fun on Twitter, everybody just yells at me. You can have fun. And I did. El Berberino, Adam, gave very specific instructions. He said, don't stop believing, but you have to start right at the end of the guitar solo at like 3:07 and try to time it so that the don't stop believing hits right when you get to your seat so that you can climb onto the table at your congressional hearing and lip sync if it feels right, which it will.
Don't stop believing.
I was thinking it would be the Sopranos finale where it just goes, right? Or whatever it is. Right? That's a better
that's
one.
Good.
Don't stop. And then boom. And you, the whole hearing.
I'm assuming that our producers are going to score this whole thing with all these songs,
they
right?
Better.
We got nothing but time to get this out today.
You know, who knows? So we've
are
got
they nodding.
They are nodding, except the one who's actually going to have to do the work is go, "What? Shut up."
So we did put this on
a Spotify playlist actually. Go on Spotify, look for Marketplace APM. And it's there. I honestly, in all producer deference, I don't know if they're going to have time to do this, but if they're worth anything, they will. I'll just say that.
That's just so awesome.
There you go.
Oh my God. I'm going to tweet the bejesus out of this.
All right.
I love it.
Boom.
What a fun week.
Look at that.
All right. That's all we got. Thank you for sticking with us through the stream of consciousness episode of Make Me Smart, in which there was little to no source material. We will see you again Tuesday.
No, we were the source material. You were the source material.
We
Molly's
and
source
Terrell.
Material
Actually,
Wood.
This
That's
a,
it. And Terrell. Yeah.
This is a freaking awesome episode.
I'm
what
not
am
saying,
I trying
by
to
the
kid?
Way, just for the record, I got crap for not saying
Highway to Hell.
Oh, but you are? What is that? I'm just going
to
read the credits. Make Me Smart, produced by Christopher Olin, Shara Morris, Annie Reese, and senior producer Eve Tro. This week's program was engineered by Daniel Ramirez. Theme music composed by Ben Tolliday and Daniel Ramirez. Executive Director of On Demand is Tatar Nieves. Senior Vice President, General Manager Deborah Clark. We got to go.
I'm trying so hard not to sing Metallica right now.
I sang last time. You sang this time. We have to take turns. We should do a karaoke night. I'm kidding. That was a joke. I'm not doing a karaoke night.
No, we're totally going to do that. That would be the best meetup ever.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.